Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There's a new man at the helm of the Ohio Senate, but the same old issues are at hand. Medicaid, public school funding, taxes, taxes, taxes. Joining us now to talk about the next two-year session of the Ohio General Assembly is Aaron Marshall of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Welcome back, Aaron.
Thanks, Ann.
Also, Kathy Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
To our listeners out there, if you have a question or comment, any hopes and dreams for the Ohio General Assembly that you would like to share with us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Senate President-elect, right? Keith Faber.
Until 2 o'clock, I
okay,
think, right?
It's today. He's developed a new committee structure to examine specific aspects of Governor Kasich's upcoming, as yet to be introduced, two-year state spending plan. Why a new structure? What's wrong with the old one where a committee, a finance committee, had and its subcommittee members examine the state budget and parse it, so to speak? Kathy?
Well, I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of big parts of this budget. You'd mentioned school funding is a big part. There's going to be a lot with Medicaid probably in this budget. So to have different subcommittees perhaps looking at different aspects may be a good way to more closely examine the budget.
But these are subcommittees that aren't part of, they aren't subcommittees of the Finance Committee. They're members that will be assessing the budget, these budget components, who will never end up voting for it on the Finance Committee, right? Isn't that how it's going to work or what?
I thought they were subcommittees so that it would still funnel through the Finance, but
okay.
I'm Mr. Faber didn't clue me in completely on what his plans were. So, but I think it still would go through Finance. And yeah, but yeah, you know what Kathy said there about, you know, school funding being big and Medicaid. I mean, I guess there can be more parsing. There can be more focusing on that. And, you know, there's going to be a big decision on whether Ohio goes ahead with a Medicaid expansion that could have some serious political overtones.
Like what?
Well, whether they decide to do it or not, and just that, you know, that raises the specter of Obamacare and, you know, should we allow the federal government to tell us who should be eligible for health care?
Potential case of capitulation then. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I like the approach from the reporter's standpoint because, you know, when we're interested in certain aspects of the budget, we can focus on those groups that are the committees that are looking at those aspects. I'm not sure it's a bad idea yet, but we may feel different about it after we see how it operates.
Well, I think, too, that some of these lawmakers were maybe caught off guard when Governor Kasich proposed the severance tax last fall.
Right.
Last year, rather. And I think maybe this might be an attempt to try to find some things maybe so that that might go through. Because both Senate President, outgoing President Niehaus and Speaker Bill Batchelder have said that they think that there's a resolution to that severance tax coming up. And so maybe this is an attempt to try to find other things that can be packaged as tax reform and looking at it from an overall picture.
Yeah, well, this severance tax is expected to be part of the budget again, right?
I think so.
And of course, it's the severance tax on the oil and gas oil and gas producers out of Eastern Ohio's shale
deposits. Yeah, the drillers. It's the tax, it's been explained to me, the tax for severing the resource from the earth. That's mm-hmm. you're paying the tax on that. And Governor Kasich had proposed that in his budget update, and the Republicans stripped it out. And so I would expect to see that as part of his budget.
Speaking of budget update, are we expecting a budget update in 2014 or
the next year after this year? I don't know. You know, he seemed to like that approach, but of course he'll be running for re-election right then. So it might be a tough time for him to be pushing a budget
at that point
through.
In the game.
Yeah, I think it would be really tough, although he's shown that he likes it. And I think it was pretty effective and it wasn't as, you know, we were all kind of dreading it when we heard they were doing it, but it actually wasn't that bad. I think they did some important things.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I have a trio of State House reporters, Karen Kassler from the Public Radio State House News Bureau, Kathy Kandisky from the Columbus Dispatch and Aaron Marshall from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Michael in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. The question that I had to the panel related to, I guess, something unrelated to Medicaid, but something that might be a little more relevant to myself and my peers. I'm a student at Ohio State University, and I was just wondering, you know, kind of what the forecast was in terms of the higher education budget, what we might see on tuition caps, tuition raises, and anything relevant to that matter.
Good question.
I
think it's going to be part of the budget. I think this whole idea of reforming education K through 12, or as I've heard the governor talk about it, K through job or something like that.
Pre-K, I think.
Yeah. And then going into higher education, I think it's absolutely going to be a part of what's coming up. But we haven't gotten too many hints.
You know, a lot of times that the caller mentioned tuition caps and such. A lot of times those are matched up with state aid to higher education. So if there's money for the state to provide to higher ed, they may impose limits on tuition. If they're not going to give higher ed more funding, you don't see those kind of...
They
give them the freedom to raise. So, you know...
You know, I don't have anything specifically on higher ed funding right now. I haven't heard... you know, exactly how that's going to go. But to put this in a larger context, I mean, this is John Kasich's reelection budget. And I think he wants it to be a little bit more friendly and more giving than his last budget. And I think that there's going to be not a lot more money for universities, not a lot more money for K to 12. But I think that there's going to be maybe a little bit more money. So I don't have any specifics I can tell you right now, Michael, but I can say that you know, the draconian cuts that we saw 2 years ago are probably not going to, you know, be there.
Well, and I'm also wondering, there was this idea of charter universities that the governor talked about a year or so ago, where they would be released from certain state obligations, but then they wouldn't have to do other things. And so I'm just wondering if that might come back, and we might hear a little bit more about that. And those schools might be able to charge different structures because they would be under sort of different rules.
Okay, Michael.
Yeah, sure. I just had kind of one more question, kind of talking about the structure. I remember John Kasich talking about the 3-year degree a lot, and that was in years past. And I don't know if the idea fizzled out or if it was, you know, shot down somewhere in the State House. But has there been any renewed, talk or chatter about something like that again?
I haven't heard anything about that, but I don't think it's been shot down. I just think it's something they haven't gotten to.
Mm-hmm. Michael, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. You know, speaking of more friendly and forgiving, what are we talking about? I mean, he's being more friendly. He will be or might be more friendly and forgiving in this budget because he can afford to be more friendly and forgiving. The state isn't in the... basement like it was right. 2 years ago.
Well, I think Aaron's exactly right. This is going to be a budget that's hopefully going to propel his reelection bid. I think the income tax cut, they want to do an income tax cut. I think that's going to be funded through that severance tax we talked about earlier. I think that they're leaning towards a Medicaid expansion, which, of course, will help low-income childless adults gain access to health insurance. I think they're leaning towards that. I think, again, as Aaron mentioned, I think you're going to see a bump in state aid to schools, primary and secondary schools, probably money for college higher ed as well. So I think you're going to see, not big jumps in a lot of things, but you're going to see money going into a bunch of different areas.
And this is a reflection of a much improved economy.
Yes. Yeah, where we're not dealing with this budget deficit that, you know, some people had estimated as high as $8 billion 2 years ago. The unemployment rate is down. There's a lot of good signs in the economy. So, yeah, you're right. This is a different, an entirely different environment than it was 2 years ago.
Yeah, the other interesting dynamic in a state budget is, of course, that you have to get it through the legislature. It's not just what governor wants to do. It's that the legislature has to, at least a majority of them have to go along with it. And I think in the last budget, these, you know, lawmakers, a lot of whom have, you know, ties to local government, you know, maybe they were mayor or on county commission or whatever. I think they could go back to their local officials that they have to face and say, look, there's really no money here. We just don't have the money. You're going to have to take these cuts. I don't think that they're going to be willing to go back and say that this time because it's not the case.
What is there left to cut? Practically for so many of them anyways. Could they be getting some more money back? Could local government benefit?
Well, and that's the question that a lot of Democrats have raised about the severance tax, saying that instead of using it for state income tax relief, which is what Governor Kasich has wanted to do, that money should go back to local governments and schools to restore cuts from the last budget.
And relieve tax increases at that point.
Well, but I think Governor Kasich has made it clear from the time that he announced that he was running, even before that, that he wants to eliminate the state income tax, and this is one step toward it. So I don't think local governments and schools can necessarily expect any more money to, you know, the restoration of cuts from the last budget. They might get more money this time around, but the governor's made it real clear that he's not going to give them more money and try to bring back some of those cuts that were made.
The idea of a severance tax is that it's severing finite resources from the earth that we call Ohio. It's temporary. If you're using that and thinking about using that for a long-range permanent tax cut or eliminating an income tax, what does that say about what the possibilities are for that? Since, I mean, where's the money going to come from to make up for the revenue in when our children's children are, you know, Buckeyes?
Well, I think it's called term limits, right?
Oh, that's right. They won't have
He's
to be worried
to worry
here.
About that. State,
yeah, state
not
government.
My problem, man.
Yeah, okay.
I can remember talking to the governor before he was the governor, when he was still running, about how do you propose to cut the state income tax? And he would say things like, well, we're going to cut the state income tax when the government is small enough that we can afford to do this. And so I'm just wondering if the grand plan is to kind of trim the size of government, so to speak, so that there won't be a need for it. But it still comes to the point of, you know, you want the government to do certain things. How do you pay for them? And so that's it's a real issue when you start talking about, like you said, finite resources, things that are eventually, though probably not, you know, for a couple of decades, but eventually going to wane or end. You know, how do you pay for it then after that's over?
They'll find something else.
They'll find something else. Find another revenue enhancement. Perfect. You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. We're talking to a trio of State House reporters. If you have a question or comment, they are welcome. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Neil Conan, host of Talk of the Nation. We hope you'll listen for live coverage of breaking news as it happens, for expert analysis that's insightful, balanced, and engaging. And we hope you'll call to join the conversations about the topics on everybody's mind. For all that and more, listen to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 to 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 29 degrees with cloudy skies today, a high of 37. Clear skies tonight, a low of 26. Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Metropolitan Club, presenting their weekly forum Wednesday, January 9th at noon. It's the Blue Chip Economic Forecast, an up-to-the-minute report on Central Ohio's dynamic economy and the future of the region. More information at columbusmetroclub.org. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're We're talking about the upcoming 2013-2014 legislative session with the Ohio General Assembly. And, of course, Governor John Kasich, who will be introducing his next two-year state spending plan for the state of Ohio, I guess it's in February, usually does that, February, March.
But it's due March 15th, I think.
It's due March 15th, okay.
And I think we expect the State of the State to happen right around mid-late February, and so I think that's when we're going to get a lot of the details.
If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Charlotte. She asks, will the heartbeat bill or anything related to Planned Parenthood funding come up again this year? And, of course, the heartbeat bill is the proposed legislation that would ban abortions after a fetus is the heartbeat of a fetus is detected. What about that heartbeat bill? It died in the Senate. It passed in the House. They didn't bring it to a vote in the Senate last year, but we've had a change of leadership, as we mentioned earlier. Keith Faber, the president-elect of the Senate, president as of this afternoon, has supported it in the past.
I think there's a majority of the Senate that supported it. The only issue was whether to bring it for a vote. And, of course, President Niehaus decided not to bring it for a vote, so it sat. But I think if it's brought to a vote this time, I think it's a slam dunk. And I think it will be brought to a vote. As we were talking during the break, Senate President-elect Faber was one that Niehaus had to remove from a committee to ensure it didn't go to the floor. So I think we'll see it come. And the other thing that happened before the end of the session was the two sides on this debate, anti-abortion groups on this side came together with a compromise on this, which is what Niehaus had wanted them to do. I'm talking about Ohio Right to Life and the supporters of the heartbeat bill. Ohio Right to Life had originally not been in favor of this bill. Well, they came to an agreement with the supporters of it for it. So I think they've cleared probably two of their only two hurdles.
What was the agreement that they came to? Was there a compromise, or did the Ohio Right to Life just decide to back it?
Well, since it never made it to the floor, we don't officially know.
Okay.
The concerns were always about constitutionality, and the real question remains is whether lawmakers can pass a bill that they know is unconstitutional, whether they should do that. And I specifically asked Tom Niehaus about that on our TV show that aired this past weekend, and he never answered directly the question. But, you had some lawmakers saying, we know this is unconstitutional. We're going to vote for it anyway, because the whole goal is to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Right. Now, I'm wondering if the heartbeat bill comes back forward. And I think Kathy's right that especially if it starts in the Senate, it's going to pass. Will Governor Kasich sign it, even though he is identified as pro-life? He's mm-hmm. always said he's pro-life. This bill, though, is so controversial, he'll be preparing for re-election.
Has he commented on it before?
He won't talk about it. He says specifically, when you ask him about it, he says he doesn't get involved with bills in the legislature, which, come on. I mean, he's gotten
really?
Involved.
We've just been talking
unless
about
he doesn't want to get involved.
Right. But on this particular issue, I don't think he wants to get involved because this is controversial.
Mm-hmm. When we last left this debate in the Senate, there was actually a version of the bill that made the rounds at the very end that would have been a two-tiered version of the bill, with the first tier being an outright ban on abortions, with an exception for rape and incest. And then if that was struck down by the courts, it would revert to the heartbeat bill, which basically would ban abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is 8 weeks. So, the question to me is not, is the heartbeat bill going to move and is that going to pass the legislature, but are they possibly even going to go farther than the heartbeat bill? I mean,
With an outright ban.
And that brings up the question to me, though, would Governor Kasich sign something that was blatantly unconstitutional to take it to the U.S. Supreme Court when President Obama has just been reelected? I just wonder. I mean, Tom Niehaus was saying to me that one of the reasons he didn't want the heartbeat bill to go forward in the last session was because it didn't look like it had a very good chance before the U.S. Supreme Court because of President Obama's reelection.
And, of course, the state of Ohio funds this court. Yeah, the litigation over it.
Sure.
The state of Ohio has to defend it.
Defending its own law.
Right.
Sure they do.
I think this is a nightmare for Kasich, honestly, because he wants the focus to be on the economy and job creation, and he's got a decent track record. You know, not great, not as good as he wants, but he can say that there's jobs that have been created under his watch. And if they pass an, you know, heartbeat bill or outright ban, you know, I think some of your female listeners wouldn't.
That crosses a line for a lot of voters.
It does. I mean, the question is whether the governor's going to try and work behind the scenes to make sure the bill doesn't come up before the Senate, or whether, I mean, because I think, I personally think once it gets to his desk, he has to sign it. I don't think he has a choice. I mean, I think that the debate on this, as far as the governor goes, is going to have to be behind the scenes now. He's going to have to, if he doesn't want that bill coming to his desk, if he doesn't want to have to sign it, he can't say that when the bill gets there. He's got to do it now.
Sounds like maybe he should have gotten to work before they got ready to elect Keith Faber president of the Senate,
maybe,
though.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think Janet Folger Porter, the head of the Faith to Action, the group that was backing the heartbeat bill, is going to go away quietly. I mean, I haven't seen her around lately, but she was certainly very vocal last month when the Senate was having these talks behind the scenes of whether this bill was going to go to the floor. So, you know, her group could make things difficult for the governor in terms of being loud about this bill not coming forward. But then again, you know, if it did pass and the governor did sign it, I think that there are a lot of moderate voters out there that would find it to be a problem.
Is this a bill that's going to go through quickly? I mean, we know it already passed the House. Did the House makeup change enough to affect it there?
Well, as Aaron mentioned, it's a whole new bill now. So we have to see what the new bill.
It's a new session.
Yeah, it's a new bill, a new session. These kind of high-profile abortion bills tend to go on and on for weeks of testimony, of very, you know, emotional testimony, of lots of constituents crowding the hallways, crowding the committee rooms. So I don't know that, I guess you could, but I think it would be difficult for a brand new bill, new version of this bill to come in and go quick.
On the other hand, if they don't get it over with quick and they wait too long, it starts to have the same problems they do in the last General Assembly session. It starts to affect election prospects, re-election prospects. So
you do wonder if maybe they're looking for other things they can do to appease the anti-abortion constituents short of this bill. Like there's also legislation to strip funding from Planned Parenthood,
which Charlotte mentioned in her.
So there's other bills, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll focus more on other things they might do.
Rod in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rod.
Yes, good morning, all. I had a couple of quick comments. You know, you mentioned the severance tax on the fracking. One thing that I'm concerned about is what happens, you know, if the severance tax is taken to offset the state income tax, what happens to the local governments? A lot of these local governments are in poorer counties, and basically,
you mean where the fracking is occurring,
right? Okay. Bring in the heavy equipment and so forth to do the drilling is going to beat, you know, one thing is going to beat the roads to gravel. You know, who's going to replace those roads? And also, it seems to me, you know, Governor Kasich wants to cut the income tax, and also he's cutting back on local government. It seems like he's creating a two-tier economic system in this state where you have the local school districts, you know, the richer school districts and governments on one side, and apparently doesn't believe in giving state aid to the poorer districts in the rural and inner city areas.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we don't know. What is his new funding formula going to look like? Does anyone have any idea?
The only thing that I'm guessing is that there's going to be some way of money following the student. But that's
charter schools and
there's
vouchers
a lot of
and
room
that sort
to
of
move
thing.
In that. It's that's really, I mean, I'm not the expert. I think, Kathy, you know a lot about more about this.
I mean, they're playing it pretty close to the vest. So we're hearing little things like as we spoke earlier, that there's going to be a slight bump in state aid to schools. They're certainly not going to go into a reelection bid with, you know, a soundbite that they cut aid to state schools. So you can expect that. There's also a lot of interest in money following the student. So if you have a student with special needs, perhaps, maybe you could take your allotment of state and local funds that would be for your kid and take it to a school of your choice, that maybe a school that is better suited for your child. I think there's a lot of interest in that, charter schools, vouchers, and such. I also think that we might see a stepped-up effort to address low-performing schools. We have a lot of laws on the books right now.
Third grade reading guarantee being one of them.
Yes. But we have a lot of laws on the books right now to shut down poor performing charter schools. Now, the State Department of Education hasn't always been real aggressive in pursuing it, but those laws are on the books. I think you might see something similar with the traditional public schools. I think there's an effort to try and really kind of come down on the poor performing schools. I think you might see, I think the governor seemed enticed by the prospects of giving mayors more control over schools when they need it, like what you saw in not
strong mayors or even figurehead mayors.
Well, I think the Cleveland plan is one of the big things he's looked at. I mean, that's the plan where the mayor of Cleveland and some Cleveland lawmakers, mm-hmm. the teachers union, all these groups got together and ended up passing a levy. But there was this levy really hinged on some funding to go to charter schools, some you know, levy money to go to charter schools. But it was this whole partnership where the mayor got heavily involved.
The idea of being a local partnership. Yeah. And now you see Columbus schools kind of having some issues right now that they're having.
They've established this commission.
And they've established a commission. And you're seeing a lot of encouragement, perhaps some would even say pressure, on Mayor Coleman here in Columbus to get involved with the Columbus school situation. So I wouldn't be surprised to see something in the budget that perhaps addressed giving local control, rather than having the State Department of Education be the ones to deal with poor performing schools. Maybe it would be more of a local problem to be dealt with.
Right local now, it has solution. To be done on a case-by-case basis, the legislation permitting it.
There's not really much to address poor performing traditional public schools.
But as far as the mayor being involved in taking over school
right.
districts,
oh,
Mike Coleman has said, has adamantly said, he does not want to become mayor of the schools.
No, I don't think he does, but I think he wants to help push the reforms and overhaul of what happens in the district.
Well, and I'm thinking of Mike White in Cleveland. That was kind of the last time that we had a mayor really getting heavily involved in the schools.
About 17, 18 years ago.
Yeah, and I can't even remember how long, but it wasn't. I don't think it was really good for him. I think it was a very difficult relationship. I was working in Cleveland at the time and remembering it being challenging on all sides.
And has it achieved? Are Cleveland schools now better schools since the mayor took over?
Mayors, yet to be seen.
Yes.
I think it depends on how you want to gauge that. There are schools in Cleveland that are high performing. Not most of them, but there are. Some schools there that are doing very well by everyone's measurements, but you know do most of the kids in Cleveland go to a lot better school since mayoral control? I don't think that anyone would say that.
Rod, thanks for your call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
And by the way, on that Cleveland plan, just to give a little promo to the public radio station State Impact, which has some reporters that have been doing some work on education issues throughout Ohio, has done some coverage of the Cleveland plan and what exactly it would do, at least at what it intends to do. So,
okay, you can get to that if you go to our website at WOSU.org. An email from Bobby says Governor Kasich wants to use all or almost all of any revenue from a severance tax on fracking operations to reduce income taxes on Ohioans. However, I and others who understand the actual or potential environmental impacts of fracking would like to see have some of these revenues go to local governments where many of these impacts occur. So this is taking it a step further. Mm-hmm. And I think Rod alluded to it a little bit in his comment that we were talking earlier about more expansively sharing the funding with local governments. But this guy's, Bob's talking about what happens to those communities where fracking is occurring.
Well, let me just say this, that they're right now to if you want to do fracking, if you want to do drilling in, like, let's say Harrison County or rural Eastern County where this stuff is taking place, you have to have a project road agreement with the locals there. So the people that are doing the drilling are building and enhancing roads in these areas a lot of the time because they need to do it because they're bringing in huge trucks that these local, you know, rural areas don't have the infrastructure to support. So they are putting money towards the roads simply because they can't do the business that they want to do on the roads that exist right now. So there is definitely some road upgrades. Now, you know, are there other impacts, noise impacts, you know, pollution impacts?
Well, long-term pollution, nobody's ultimately sure what the long-term effects are.
Well, you know, it's important. We haven't seen the proposal yet, but if the proposal is a straight, you know, severance tax to fund an income tax, this type of discussion is what you're going to see in the legislature. You're going to see the lawmakers from these areas make strong arguments like your caller has made, your emailer's made. And that's the kind of debate and tinkering that I would expect to be seeing during the legislative process. And then we'll see how it comes out. I mean, that would be some kind of compromise you might expect to see.
And then on the flip side, I think that the lawmakers that aren't from Eastern Ohio are going to say, well, wait a minute. Actually, the waste from this stuff is stored all over the state.
It's something we all share.
So shouldn't we? You know, where's our piece? So I, you know.
Well, and interestingly, when I talked to outgoing President Niehaus and Minority Leader Eric Kearney on the TV show, Eric Kearney was saying, and, you know, Democrats have been largely supportive of the severance tax, but he was saying he was concerned about one part of the state basically shouldering the burden for all these things that you were just talking about, while the whole state would benefit from an income tax cut, which is interesting because usually you hear Democrats talk about they want the money to go to local governments. This particular Democrat was talking about he wanted to see the money go specifically into that area or make sure that area was taken care of. So I think Kathy's right. This is exactly the kind of discussion that you're going to see throughout this whole process. And I think that may be one reason why we might expect to see the budget not wait until March 15th, but actually be proposed a little bit earlier, because there's going to be, we don't want to take this down to the wire. We've had too many budgets where we've gone down to June 30th and they're at the last minute figuring this out.
No, I think it's going to be in February.
Yeah, actually. I think so too. Yeah. I don't think we're going to have to wait.
That's what I've heard, February.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're going to break right here. If you want to join the conversation, 614-292-8513. My guests are Karen Kassler, Bureau Chief of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau, Catherine Kandisky of the Columbus Dispatch, and Aaron Marshall of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Questions or comments, you can also go to our Facebook page or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. You know, to be honest, these days it can feel like a lot just to hang on in the rush of news. To have a good, rich conversation in that rush, well, that's what we're all about. I hope you'll join us for the next On Point.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on today's On Point. The coming debt ceiling battle. The president says he won't be held hostage by Congress. Is there any constitutional way for him to avoid a standoff? That discussion during On Point today at 1. And stay right here in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock for hour 2 of All Sides and a discussion of the returning National Hockey League season and hockey coming back to Columbus for the Blue Jackets. Join us for that discussion from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. Expect some clouds today, a high of 37, clear skies for tonight, a low of 26 degrees, sunshine for Tuesday and a high of 44, partly cloudy Tuesday night, a low of 33, and sunny skies with a high of 47 on Wednesday. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues here on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
Welcome back. We're kind of previewing the upcoming two-year session of the Ohio General Assembly. It's been around for 130-something years now. Quite exciting. 614-292-8513.
Are you sure about that?
I'm not laughing. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there, or you can tweet us at WOSU All Sides. Talking with Aaron Marshall of the Cleveland Plain.